All right, well, welcome back to another fabulous episode of Golden State of Mindcast. Our guest from SB Nation's own Seth Rosenthal, who is here from Posting and Toasting, we'd like to welcome him on to the podcast. So welcome, Seth. How you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We also have ye old trusty Nate.
Yo.
I would say wave for the cameras, but obviously this is purely audio. So basically, we are here and we are previewing tomorrow's Knicks-Warriors game and sort of just taking a look at two of the more interesting teams for different reasons in the league right now. So I guess just I'd love to start off. I mean, the Knicks have been such an interesting roller coaster, for lack of a more poetic way to say it. But I mean, they started off so hot. The whole Kristaps is the god of everyone went up in flames, or not up in flames, but it just became like the biggest story in the world. And now, you know, everything that happened with Fisher, and just what is your, as somebody who's been kind of not so much around the team, but just covering the team day in and day out, Seth, what's been your overall take, if you have one, on the season so far for the Knicks?
It's funny, because I think the Knicks are going to end up with 30-something wins. They're 28-40 going into the Warriors game. And I think every reasonable person had them somewhere between 30 and 40 wins. And they're going to hit that right on the money. And somehow it still feels like it's been a crazy, unpredictable season, because they went out and won 22 of those games, you know, in the first half of the season, and since have done pretty much nothing. So it feels to me almost like they offended everyone's expectations by making the mistake of winning too much too fast and then letting the bottom fall out. But yeah, they're out of the playoff race. They're pretty much just playing out the strings. So the feeling right now is a lot of people are grumpy. I'm just kind of waiting for the off season to arrive and for them to get back to work building the team.
Did things get worse when Fisher left? Like in terms of wins and losses, is that what you're kind of alluding to?
No, I don't know the exact number. They were on a pretty rough streak. I think it was 9 of 10 they'd lost when Fisher went. And, you know, they've had at least a couple solid games since, though it's mostly been losing. So I think record-wise they're probably slightly – they're not better than Fisher's overall record, but they're definitely like month over month have improved a tiny bit just in terms of winning.
Gotcha.
Before the season, I know when we talked in Summer League, you and Network and a couple of the other guys who really follow the Knicks, you were pretty high on Kristaps from the get-go. Did you ever see it getting to this point, though?
No. Something we've talked about a bunch since then, and you know, you guys were both around me in Vegas, is Kristaps was really impressive in Vegas in Summer League. And he showed, you know, that he can shoot, that he can put the ball on the floor, that he can move his feet on defense. But we sat there and watched him and we said, okay, you know, he's probably ready to play at least. But he's definitely not strong enough. You know, he's going to get overpowered. He's not ever going to be a rebounder anytime soon, if ever. He's still a little awkward, all these things. And Kristaps has come down to earth a little bit. He's not like one of the best rebounders in the league anymore, but at least to start the season, it was so crazy because any criticism you had of him going in, he completely turned on its ear. You know, it's like I was just saying, we really all watched him and said, okay, he's never going to box anybody out. Rebounding is going to be a huge problem. And literally to start the season for the first month or two, he was one of the best offensive rebounders in the entire NBA. And so he's, you know, he's perhaps hit a rookie wall. His conditioning, his lack of conditioning, and his just lack of experience, and perhaps some scouting have caught up to him a little bit, so that the really awesome, amazing moments and games are somewhat fewer and further between. But this has really been a terrific season, and I think even the most optimistic among us didn't see him being this effective and this crucial to the team's success this quickly.
Did you see him?
I was listening to the Warriors broadcast, radio broadcast last night, and they were saying that he could sneak up on Karl-Anthony Towns like 5 years and be the best player in this class. Do you at all agree with that?
I wouldn't rule it out. I think Towns is amazing enough that saying no to that question is not, you know, a slight to Chris Apps. Certainly they were neck and neck in the Rookie of the Year race until only a couple months, you know, a month or two ago. Sure, he's, you know, he's a bigger guy. He has more, I guess, you know, physical attributes going for him, but they're the same age. Towns is so amazing right off the bat that that's a pretty high bar to set.
Yeah.
Do you see him as the clear number two still in this rookie class behind Towns?
Yeah, I do.
Who would you put at number three? I'm just curious.
I mean, Okafor is a really, really solid player, even though he struggles quite a bit defensively. It's sort of a rough situation for him. It's hard to properly appraise him. I think I put Okafor third. I think close behind are probably Moutier and Winslow. I'm probably forgetting somebody.
And then
D'Angelo Russell.
I was gonna say
D'Angelo Russell. Yeah.
I was gonna throw in a little.
I was forgetting something.
I was gonna throw in a Kevon Looney. Kevon Looney is my dog. Kevon
Looney. You need to stop, Ray.
Yeah, Russell's in there too. He's in the running for third. I knew I was neglecting someone, but I'm very very focused on Kristaps, so other rookies might as well not exist.
Didn't you and Network have something that like Kristaps is your illegitimate child between the two of you or something, or somebody claimed him as their
honestly
illegitimate?
Like that's like a joke we make, but you know, I'm I don't have any kids, but the feel like the pride and the joy that I feel when he's really going off and the kinds of, well, let's say, all right. So one thing is I feel what I can only guess is like a tenth of what a father feels in terms of pride. And then the texts, just like the correspondences between me and Jason Network about Kristaps, sort of waver between like this intense parental almost pride and just like pornography.
Oh, jeez.
Would you say that Kristaps is positively preparing you for an eventual fatherhood? Do you feel like you're getting thrown to the fire right now, you know, just with your emotions?
No, this is bad preparation for fatherhood because it's just setting the bar way too high. My expectations for my child are going to be like, yo, why are you not 7'3"? Why don't you have a feathery touch? I can never have a kid now.
Oh, man, this is why we need Ivan.
We have a running joke. We normally have a third wheel. Not a third wheel. We have a person who normally moderates these things. Who's the third?
Normally moderates it.
And keeps
this
us
is
in
why
check.
He moderates.
And then we always joke that we have like an Ivan bat light that we have to shoot off into the sky in the San Francisco skyline, like whenever things get too off the rail. But that being said, Nate, I'm sure you have a follow up question to that whole conversation.
No, nothing any more reasonable than what you're assessing. So. I do think, I mean, so I think it's interesting, like, because, so this is funny. I've heard a few Warriors fans talking this way, so bear with me. A few Warriors fans said they felt the same way about Anthony Randolph when he was drafted, and that I think so many people really did imagine Anthony Randolph being very similar to Kristaps, and he's not now, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Although he's somehow still, like, 25.
Yes, right. I mean, there's no way he's older than what he was when we drafted. To me, he's still like, you know, whatever, 23, 24. I just find it amazing to watch this player who, the thing about Kristaps is that there was so little known about him that I think there was so much mystery surrounding him for the most part, about especially what he would, how he would translate to the league, how he'd even adapt to like the U.S. game was a question among a lot of people. Whereas you had, and this all worked out, whereas I think there was a lot of mystery around Anthony Randolph, too, because he only played 1 year for a terrible LSU team in a terrible situation. And it's just interesting how sometimes that love as a father can really work out. And sometimes, you know, the Anthony Randolph love
sometimes
really
your child is
busted.
A horrible, horrible, horrible disappointment.
Horrible child. And there were a lot of people who were moving to adopt Anthony
And you
Randolph.
Have to you have to ship it off to boarding school somewhere far away.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically the vibe. But so... So how do you see this matchup tomorrow, getting back to the Warriors versus Knicks game, which is what we're talking about, I guess?
How do I see the matchup between the Knicks and the Warriors? I don't know. How does a bug see a windshield? I don't like Jose Calderon and Sasha Vujicic are going to be the starting backcourt against Steph and Clay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, there's nothing.
Listen, I mean, I think probably like the last game, the Knicks will like make it look like they're going to keep the game competitive for a little while. And then the fact that they have a ghastly backcourt defense will kick in and the Warriors will take over. If the Warriors are like, you know, a little too cocky or whatever and just not hitting their shots or kind of relaxing, it'll stay close for a little bit and then they'll blow it open.
I mean, we did get blown out by the Lakers, so I have a healthy dose of humble pie sitting next to me.
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen. But I don't, you know, I consider it basically like an open run. You know, it's a scrimmage. The Knicks are just there to hopefully get some cardiovascular exercise. You know, pretty much
it. All right. So, assuming
are there younger players now you're looking to see more run from or anything, or like
definitely
particular lineups or matchups you'd like to see more of as the season's kind of like the playoffs are not really your aim. So, what other kinds of players do you want to see in the game?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is there aren't that many guys, if only because both Fisher and Rambis have had pretty deep rotations. Like, there isn't anyone deep on the bench that everyone's wondering about. They also only have 14 guys on the team right now. But Jaren Grant, a big one. And his minutes have gone up and then gone down a little bit, actually, in the last game or two. But he is still not quite a known quantity, and you know, he's 23. His ceiling may not be that far ahead, but on a team that is deeply lacking at point guard, and sort of, you know, having a decent backcourt feels like the difference between this team being garbage and being competitive. Everyone, I think, wants to see Grant spin a little bit more, and Rambis has been somewhat reluctant to sort of just hand over things to him, because I think Rambis to an extent feels like he's coaching for his job, which he is. And so doesn't want to rely on a rookie, even though the rookie might be, you know, Sasha Vujicic is the competition. So the rookie might not be such a bad option. But Grant has been unpredictable, not terrific in the half court, not that consistent defensively, but he's got a lot of slashing ability. He's really creative around the rim and can finish with either hand. He's a pretty good passer in the pick and roll and just very, very slithery and elusive and fun to watch, certainly more so than, you know, guys he's vying for minutes with. So there aren't a ton of guys that Knicks fans are still really wondering about, but he's the big one that hopefully tomorrow and henceforth we'll be seeing more and more of.
I read an interesting quote. I think it was Chris Herring. I could be wrong. I read it on Twitter last night or something. Somebody was coming out and he said he got in a cab in Oakland and he started talking to the cab driver. And the guy asked him what he did. And you know, he said, "Oh, I read about the Knicks professionally." And the guy was like a diehard Warriors fan, but was originally from the East Coast and had grown up in New York, and said, like, "Man, that's my biggest regret is that I never saw a Knicks game at Madison Square Garden before I moved out here. And now I'm not sure if I ever will." And it just, I think that the idea or the thing that interested Chris was just that the Knicks somehow have this draw or they have this appeal, and the fact that they have the vast majority of New York City behind them at all times, win or lose, like they're always this sort of mythical team. They're always sort of talked about perhaps more so than even, you know, even the Warriors sometimes, maybe not this year, but, you know, and as evidenced by now, and I, full disclosure, I live in New York, so I hear a lot of this stuff on the radio and I see it on the newspapers and everything. And like, the way that the team is covered and the way that people approach the team and the fact that they do play at Madison Square Garden, it has such a sort of mythical element to it that even like minute things like the triangle or Phil's going to come and coach again become these just almost horrendous stories.
Yeah.
I don't really have a question in there, but would you like to speak a little bit as to like,
sure.
I
think that mythical quality resonates with fans. I think the Garden is hallowed and I think it deserves some of that. Certainly it's not as charming as it was pre-renovation, but it's still really fun. I was at the Big East tournament the other night, and it wasn't even a Knicks game. It wasn't even really packed, but there's something about, I don't know if it's the design of the building or just the nature of the crowd in there, but I really do. I haven't been to that many other NBA arenas, but I do think, as someone who grew up going to the Garden, that there's nothing quite like the Garden going nuts. And the additional thing there is that, like you said, no matter how bad the team is, and they've been bad for most of my life at this point, no matter how bad the team is, Mike Breen, actually, so the Knicks played a really horrible but very close game against the Lakers the other day. And Mike Breen was saying this about Staples Center, and I think it's true of the Garden too, is that it doesn't matter if they're tanking. It doesn't matter if the coach just got fired, if none of the players on the team are worth keeping, if the situation is terrible. If it's a close game and it's the final minutes, the place goes nuts. Right. And they treat it like a playoff game. And that's fun. It isn't necessarily, you know, the most intellectual way to approach a basketball game, or healthy. Yeah. But it's fun. You know,
well, I mean,
fun.
Oracle was that same way, my whole childhood. So
I've never been to the Oracle, but I've always gotten that sense.
Yeah, I like calling it the Oracle. That's a nice little twist. Have you been to the Oracle? Have you been to see the Oracle? No.
Yes, she told my future. Anyway, but so the flip side of that, I think, is that for whatever mythical quality it has, which is sort of intangible and dreamy, there is a very real megaphone on everything that happens in New York, which you were getting at as well. And I think that part resonates more with players, which is every, you know, both the good, which is if, you know, you have a great personality and, you know, want to make money with endorsements and have cool things to say and things to share, then that'll be great. And I think Kristaps Porzingis is experiencing that right now because he's confident and intelligent and hardworking and says the right things. And New York has turned him into an angel. And that's awesome for him. But if you are a curmudgeon, or if there are rumors swirling around you, or if you've had something happen in your life and people are going to ask you about it, that experience is much more overwhelming in New York than it would be in other places. And Kristaps will experience that at some point, I'm sure. But I would imagine that guys are sometimes driven away from New York because they just don't want to deal with it. And I completely understand that.
How long do you see the honeymoon lasting for Kristaps? How many years?
Oh, it's already starting.
It's crumbling already.
Not, you know, I still feel great about him, and I came into the season and still feel that he deserves to struggle a little bit. You know, he's a rookie. But no, I already see people like, you know, see he was overrated, like he was hyped up too much because the dude's like not playing at a borderline all-star level in March of his
freshman
year.
Dude, that's the thing is people are so, and I say this like loving New York and living in New York and listening to the talk radio all the time in New York. Like people have slightly skewed expectations of what is going to happen at the Garden, you know?
Yep.
And that's putting it fairly mildly. Like I love nothing more than like turning on Mike Francesa and like just listening to people just scream about the Knicks, because it gives me an amazing sense of perspective on if anything happens in the. I mean, this year is not a great example, but just previously, like when before the Warriors got good, like 4 years ago, when we were going through the doldrums of the Mark Jackson era, and they were like tanking for what ended up being Harrison Barnes, I would just listen to callers on New York talk radio and just like smile because like it'll never be that bad, you know, like,
right.
Or not that bad.
It's funny how
it's
funny how the goalposts like circle themselves too. Cause Mike Francesa, I don't listen to much talk radio because it would kill me, but I promise you that Mike Francesa in June was like, who is this guy? Like Phil drafted the biggest bust ever. He's a huge stiff. And then the guy plays 20 good games and, you know, struggles in the 21st. And it's like, you know, what happened to him? He was so great. He completely fell off. And like at no point is there just something subtle and reasonable and moderate.
Yeah.
In appraising that kind of, you know, entity within the organization.
I don't know. I love it. And I love it and hate it. You know, it's just how it is here, I guess.
So, Bram, do you think that's Man, so have you ever listened to Raiders Talk Radio, Bram?
I haven't listened to Raiders because I care not for the Raiders. But okay, sure. I've listened to quite a bit of KNBR.
KNBR, okay. Yeah. I mean, what do you think distinguishes New York from other cities? Because I know I lived in D.C. for a while, and man, you listen to D.C. fans talk about the Redskins, and it's the same kind of insanity. Just like, you know, everyone needs to be cut after every loss. The Raiders, I was listening to Raiders Talk Radio like last year, and somebody was like, they're 0-3. The host is asking for predictions about the season, and someone's like, 12 wins. He's like, sir, you realize they're 0-3. He's like, that's right, 12 wins. Like, what are you talking about? So I'm wondering, like, you know, people do, obviously New York is a bigger place. There's more people. I know New York has this rep. But in terms of sports fandom, what do you really think it's that much more insane or kind of this breeds this lunacy differently in some way?
I don't. I think it's just more. I think it's
just more
reporters, more people.
Yeah.
And so it's louder and harder to avoid.
I think it's also just like, I mean, like the people who call in oftentimes are like working class, have a thick accent like Francesca, like speak loudly. Like it's just a different attitude of even just speaking and approaching conversation, you know? And so even if they're not like mad at each other, it just gets to a place where you're like, whoa, man, this is intense. Like what is going on here? The best thing that I can say is, have you seen that movie? I think it's called Big Fan with Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You've seen that? Nate, have you seen that movie? Oh, dude, it's great. So basically he works in a parking garage and he calls in every night, late night to this call-in radio show. He's actually a huge Giants fan. Yeah. He's in New York. And he's like, he writes his whole speeches ahead of time, and then he calls in and pretends to sort of like ad-lib them. I highly, highly, highly recommend watching this movie.
Okay.
And then it sort of devolves because he sees one of his favorite players, and he ends up, stuff flies off the rail, et cetera, et cetera. But just the whole premise of the thing, I think, is somehow very revealing, not so much about specifically New York fans, but just like sports fandom in general, because I mean, you look at people going to the 49ers game and getting in fights in the bathrooms. Yeah. I mean, like it's not just New York, like Seth is saying. Yeah. It's just, I think that the platform and the megaphone, as he said, which I think is such a brilliant way to look at it, is just louder and bigger because the circumference of the megaphone itself is, you know, 8 million people, 16 million people in the area across. And everybody's stoked about their team, you know? Which again, getting back to the Knicks, is why the Knicks, regardless of what happens, it's always, and maybe I feel more of it living in New York, but like, you know, everywhere I look today, it's like, is Phil going to coach? You know, I'm getting like updates on my phone, like Carmelo denies reports that Phil Jackson's going to coach. It's like, dude, who cares if like he's the G, you know, he's whatever, he's in the front office and they're not going to make the playoffs. And if he did step down, it'd be for just the end of the season, and then he'd find somebody else, you know, if it came to that. Perfectly segueing into my next question that I had planned out and written down in front of me. Seth, who do you think is going to be the next coach next year? Or who do you want to be the next coach?
I would love for it to be Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, me too.
That feels like a somewhat easy question to answer. Who do I think is going to be coach is an impossible question to answer. I couldn't even give you a list of names that I would guess would be coach. Because the thing we've learned is that Jackson is very good at both speaking and leaking information that basically adds up to nothing. You know,
hey, reporters, man, Zen is the pursuit of nothingness, you know?
I guess, yeah. You know, we went into the draft convinced that, you know, they were going to trade down, or it was going to be a 3 or 4 year college player. And people really talked about that stuff with certainty. And I can tell you as a matter of fact that beat reporters close to the Knicks were certain that he wasn't going to take Porzingis. Like that was one person he was definitely not looking at. And going into free agency, like it was a done deal that the Knicks were going to sign Greg Monroe because it made perfect sense and all this. And it was 100%, you know, July 1st going to happen. So when you look at a coaching search, there are rumors. Yeah. And everyone's like, well, it's clearly going to be one of the triangle guys. You know, they'll go pick up Shaw. They'll try and chase down Luke Walton, see if he wants to leave the Warriors. Or, you know, it's just, he'll just keep Kurt Rambis. You know, look at what he's been saying about him. He clearly loves him. Oof. I have no idea. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a, you know, if you were to write down 50 names, I wouldn't be surprised if the name isn't on that list.
But wouldn't you say that then portends well towards trending towards Thibodeau? Because nobody thinks he's going to hire Tom. So, like, what if he just comes out of nowhere and just does it?
There's an interesting calculus there, because the things you have to weigh are, on one hand, yes, Tom Thibodeau is not a Phil guy. They have no history. And so far, Phil has not employed coaches who don't have history with him. On the other hand, Thibodeau's offense actually closely resembles the triangle. And, you know, he's a really good coach. And hopefully Phil's smart enough to identify that.
Well, and he's a Knicks guy, too. So
And there's the other set of hands where, on one hand, he was Jeff Van Gundy's assistant coach. Jeff Van Gundy and him had a very messy departure from New York, and Thibodeau was blamed for, I think, a lot of the leaking that went on. And he's close with Frank Isola, and, you know, that those are marks against him in terms of James Dolan's perception of him.
Right.
On the other hand, CAA, the agency, still has their tentacles all over the Knicks. They represent the Garden. They represent Allen Houston and Mark Warkentin and Melo. And they represent Tom Thibodeau. So it's very difficult to determine whether Thibodeau is like the most obvious candidate or the most unlikely candidate.
Or both.
Or both at once.
Well, I know that we're probably getting towards the end of our allotted time. I know Nate's gotta run off and do Nate things, and I gotta go do Bram things, and Seth is gonna go rule the world. But kind of in closing, like, one thing that Nate and I always struggle with, that I think all Warriors fans struggle with, is just trying to gain a certain sense of perspective on the season that we're having, or that the team that we cover is having, that the team is happening, and we're having it all at the same time. And it's just like, it's obviously, you know, the record is what it is, and Steph is what he's doing. And what is your, from a complete outsider's view, what has been your experience of this season, and can you even put it into words?
It's tough. I kind of came into this season after really enjoying their last season. I kind of came in, and I wrote as much expecting to despise the Warriors, and I think they invite that sort of appreciation, because, you know, they are openly and willfully arrogant, and they sort of, it seems like they take joy in people, you know, hating on them and doubting them and all that, and so I really thought this was the year that I would seethe when I watched the Warriors, and it just hasn't happened. It's still such a joy to watch them. You know, Steph is unlike any Steph, really. The best way I think for me to describe the experience of watching Steph is to watch the Warriors play, and to watch Steph Curry go off with someone who doesn't watch much basketball. You know, to bring in, I had a game, I was home for a weekend a few weeks ago, and my mom sat with me briefly. And I think we almost take for granted at this point that, like, he is breaking the rules of basketball. And these physics, are not things that are allowed to happen. He's breaking the rules of physics. And, you know, basketball is an arbitrary game invented by a person. And yet through many, many repetitions, boundaries have developed. And there are sort of lines past which nobody goes. It's like, you know, the 4-minute mile sort of. And he so regularly completely offends everything that we know to be true with basketball that it's just honestly, like, you know, I spend a lot of time running and looking at the SB Nation general, like, social media accounts, Twitter and Facebook and the like. And I see, you know, we'll post a lot about Steph, obviously, and people respond like, man, just like, get over it, you know? And when I see that, no, I can't get over it. How could you possibly get over it? This isn't just a really good player. This is someone who is operating well outside the 100-year-old parameters of this game. And so, yeah, I love watching the Warriors. I am going to enjoy it if they win the championship again. And, yeah, I'm just trying my best not to take them for granted. And also trying my best to get myself to a point where, like, 20, 30 years from now when there's another great team, I'm going to be so annoying about these Warriors. And I'm sure we all are going to be like, no, it's nothing like watching Steph, you know, like the way people talk about Jordan and Magic Johnson now.
That's such a great – it's been amazing. It's like, man, these robots don't guard these robots like the humans used to guard the humans, you know?
Yeah. So here's another question me and Bram often throw around when we have guests on the show. What is your opinion of Klay Thompson? Because I feel as though, you know, when he was in trade rumors about Kevin Love, it was like, this guy's like scrap meat. We can just like throw him out there to get Kevin Love. That'll be great. And then last year, obviously, he's an all-star. And this year has kind of been up and down for Klay Thompson in a way, but he's kind of been on a tear recently. I just always kind of wonder what people who are outside of our market think about him.
I'll say first of all that I probably don't have a fully formed and intelligent opinion of Klay Thompson. I get the sense that he has, not to be simplistic, but a sort of Pippen-like quality where I'm pretty certain he could be the best player on a very good team, you know, if he weren't overshadowed by one of the best players to ever walk the earth. And so, you know, I think there he has more of a handle, more of a defensive presence, more of an ability to slash than people know and believe, and probably more than, you know, he gets to show off. And perhaps that's a totally backward opinion, but I think he is probably a better player than he gets to be. And perhaps the flip side of that is, you know, the opportunities he gets as someone who gets to, you know, play on the same court as a guy who should probably be triple teamed. The opportunities he gets are probably, you know, somewhat blown out of proportion. So it's hard to fairly judge him.
Yeah.
But I do hold him probably in higher regard than I would suppose the average fan does. I don't know if that's valid.
I actually think that is, but I don't know. It's an interesting thing, because you're right. If you don't watch the Warriors often, all you do is you zero in on Steph and his craziness.
Right.
And Klay kind of fades to the side. And I think, yeah, he has flaws, but he's improved on all those flaws.
Right. And you know, the totally wrong perception that people had of Steph, maybe even going into this year, that, well, you know, he's just a shooter.
Right.
I think that probably applies to Klay now, and it's totally wrong.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a good opinion.
Well, that seems a good place to maybe ride off into the sunset. I'd like to thank Seth Rosenthal again for coming on, and Nate Parham. I'm Bram Kinchelow, and any final closing statements in this?
We're done, man.
Righteous debate. I'm done. Drop the mic. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in, as always, and we'll be back. We promise Ivan will come back and put us into our places next week. Thank you so very much, and we'll see you next time.